Today on Maine Calling, new directions in cancer treatment. For a long time, treatment for cancer involved either surgery, chemotherapy, radiation, or some combination of the three. And those still remain the best options for most cancer patients. But there's a transformation underway in the treatment of cancer. Referred to as precision medicine, it reshapes the way doctors and researchers think about patients and even individual tumors. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we learn about these new, more targeted ways to detect and treat cancer. This precision medicine includes immunotherapy and DNA sequencing of cancer cells. Physicians join us to explain why these approaches are promising and which patients might benefit from them. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Welch & Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth. From investments to trustee services, more at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. There is a transformation underway in cancer research, an explosion in new ways to test and treat different kinds of cancer. The umbrella term is precision medicine. We're going to learn more about this from our guest today. Joining me, Dr. Christian Thomas, hematologist and oncologist and director of clinical research with the New England Cancer Specialists, and Dr. Peter Westerfeldt, medical oncologist with Maine Health based in Brunswick. We're timing this show to coincide with Pink and Pearl Awareness Week. The state of Maine has designated this week to raise awareness of breast and lung cancer and the need for screening. And of course, we invite you to join the conversations. What questions do you have about the potential for diagnosing or treating cancer? Our email address, and please make an email brief, talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Thank you both for joining us today for the hour. Dr. Thomas, I'll start with you. Most people think of cancer treatments as things like surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy. Tell us about this new approach, the term precision medicine. What does that mean, and how is it an entirely different way of thinking about treatment?
Yeah, good morning, Jennifer. And again, thank you for having me on the show and asking me to participate. Always a pleasure to be here. Always a pleasure. So you asked a really good question, and I get that question a lot. And think about cancer treatment as something that has evolved over time, obviously, from a surgical approach to radiation therapy. And both of those are still being used, of course, mostly for cancers that are more localized, that can be removed in its entirety or radiated in the area that they started to come up first. And chemotherapy is an approach that's being used to treat the whole body. And chemotherapy is sort of like a pseudonym, really, to some extent, for a treatment that is given in pill form or as an infusion or an injection. There are various iterations of that. Some are more traditionally chemotherapy, and others are just other medications. Where precision medicine comes in to play is to try to define the target better. So we're trying to move away from a tumor that may have arisen in the lung or in the colon or in the breast or in some other part of the body to a tumor that can be identified by what really makes a tumor grow and start to behave like a cancer. And so these targets have been identified on tumor cells and in the DNA of tumors. And as a result of that, we now understand what makes cancers grow. And we've been able to target that with a certain amount of precision. And that's where that precision medicine idea comes from. And that's something that's really happened over the last 10 to 20 years, more so than before.
In the future, Dr. Thomas, do you think we won't even refer to things as breast cancer or lung cancer, but rather by the kind of tumor it is?
That's exactly the transformation that's happening right now, so that we understand that certain cell mechanisms that make tumor cells grow are really ubiquitous throughout a number of different tumors. So yes, that's already happening. And we have meetings that are devoted solely to all kinds of tumors that are driven by a certain type of intracellular mechanism. So you're absolutely right that we no longer just look at tumors from the perspective of where did they originate initially, but we try to understand what makes them go. And there, different tumors from different areas have very similar properties. So that's a really, really good point.
Dr. Westerfeld, I want to ask you about different kinds of therapies, but first I want to ask you to characterize this. How exciting is it to be in cancer research and to be an oncologist right now because of these treatments?
Well, it's an incredibly exciting time to be involved in this field. And just thinking back over the last 30 years or so from when we, you know, had very rudimentary tools. Dr. Thomas mentioned surgery and radiation, and then sort of chemotherapy, which at the time was a fairly blunt instrument that really just, you know, for example, would target rapidly dividing cells, but would catch in the crossfire lots of normal tissue, like the lining of the GI tract, for example, to cause a lot of toxicity. So, yeah, the ability to be able to precisely target the cellular mechanisms that are unique to cancer cells is really a way to try and both increase effectiveness, but also decrease toxicity. And we've certainly come a long, long way over the past, you know, say 20, 30 years or so.
Yeah, so not only effective in treating the cancer, but also making it so people just don't feel horrible throughout that treatment.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Not that there aren't toxicities with the currently available therapies as well, but I think much better than in the past.
Well, let's talk about a few of them, and I'll go back to you, Dr. Westerfeld. I think the one that most people have heard of is immunotherapy. What does that mean?
So immunotherapy is a pretty broad term. Indeed, there have been hints that the immune system could be involved in helping to manage cancer for, you know, going back to the mid-1800s, if you can believe that. And it's really only been in the last, you know, few decades that we've really been able to start to harness the immune system. And we're able to do so in a variety of different ways. Those include things like using monoclonal antibodies that recognize the tumor cells specifically and target them to be eliminated. There are the area that has really gotten a lot of attention in the last few years are the field of what are called CAR T cells, or chimeric antigen receptor T cells, which really enable cells of the immune system to very specifically go after and eliminate various types of cancer cells. And these have been around now for about 10 years or so, but are really starting to enter the mainstream of treatment. So very exciting.
Dr. Thomas, who might be a candidate for immunotherapy? And let me actually back up a little bit, and I know you won't have an exact number here, but broadly, what percentage of patients are fit into, you know, have a diagnosis in which immunotherapy might be an option?
Yeah, I mean, by the day, more and more patients. We have certain drugs that tell the immune system to get activated and to go after cancer cells. It's basically one of the mechanisms that are driving this immunotherapy development. And, you know, some of those drugs are being used for 20 different types of cancers. Mm. So to your questions, there's a very, very broad applicability. What we didn't understand in the past is why was the immune system not more active going after cancer cells because cancer cells look a little different than normal cells. And typically, the immune system is recognizing that and fighting that, similar to how immune cells would fight a virus or bacteria that look very different from normal cells. Turns out that the research in the last years has shown that cancer cells have a way to silence the immune system, to turn down the immune response so that they're being, saved from the effects of white blood cells going after that. And we now understand those mechanisms and we can turn that off. So all of a sudden now the tumor cells are exposed again to our immune system, and the immune system can literally get rid of some of the tumors. So it's super exciting to see that.
All right. Dr. Westerfeld, you were talking about CAR T as one of the immunotherapies. The T stands for T cell, right? We might remember from high school biology.
Correct. So T cells are really a mainstay of the immune system that basically in a very specific way using something called a T cell receptor target unique proteins on the surface of other cells and then attack and eliminate them. So CAR T cells are derived from normal T cells from, say, a patient, and they are collected through a procedure called leukapheresis. They're sent off to a manufacturing lab where a gene is introduced that creates or that introduces a chimeric antigen receptor, which essentially targets those T cells to very specifically to antigens on the surface of cancer cells. And then the cells are returned to the treating center and infused into the patient. And so they can be very effective. Right now, there are six different CAR T treatments that are FDA approved and available. These target primarily hematologic malignancies, the things like
Blood.
acute leukemia, blood cancers, multiple myeloma, and a variety of different types of lymphomas. But that being said, there are a number of clinical trials ongoing to try and expand the targets of our CAR T cells. So we expect that over the next few years, this is a field that's going to continue to grow.
So we're going to be hearing a lot more about CAR T therapy, and not just for, I mean, it's wonderful that it targets leukemia and blood cancers, but that we're going to be hearing a lot more about it in the near future.
I expect that to be true.
Okay, Dr. Thomas, I'm going to turn to you for another phrase that people may have heard, gene therapy.
So
Explain.
gene therapy really refers to trying to identify genes that are not functioning correctly and then trying to modify them or to alter them or something like that, or even replace them. We just actually had, and it's not happening so much in the cancer area. It's more happening in other areas. We just had the first patient who was cured of sickle cell anemia by gene therapy. Literally, so sickle cell anemia is a condition that is caused by one of the genes being defective that make hemoglobin, which is the red stuff in red blood cells that is carrying oxygen. And so that gene can now be replaced with a healthy gene in someone who doesn't have a healthy copy of that gene. And you can literally cure those people. So gene therapy is mostly at its current stage, used to help people who have a gene defect to overcome that. Hemophilia has been targeted, and some other diseases have been targeted. The issue with cancer is mostly that it's not just one gene that has been altered by the cancer. It's very, very often it's multiple. There are some examples where one gene is the primary target. And in those cases, we can often find very, very effective treatments. Some forms of leukemia are a good example. Some forms of lung cancer are a good example where we have very, very effective treatments. The problem is that sometimes we have to identify more than one target, and that's where it gets to be a little bit more complicated.
Okay, I have to ask you both a really big question here. And Dr. Westerfeld, I'll start with you. We're having this conversation in a time when the president has declared this cancer moonshot, wants to end cancer as we know it. Do you believe that the kind of precision medicine we're talking about is indeed the path to that future?
I think it's the path. I'll remind everybody that Richard Nixon declared war on cancer 50 years ago, and I think they expected to win that war in over a 5-year period. So we know how that all worked out. I think precision medicine is indeed or a combination of precision medicine and immunotherapy, or certainly the what are going to the paths that are going to take us forward. I think it's also should be pointed out that that cancer it is a war fought on many fronts, and whereas we may be successful over the near term in much more effectively treating some kinds of cancer, I don't think we're going to be raising the victory flag in the next couple of years across the board.
All right, Dr. Thomas, your thoughts on sort of some
I mean,
perspective on the research and the excitement versus what we're up against.
I would totally agree with that statement. And I would say that the one thing that's important to remember is that cancer isn't a disease. It's many, many different diseases that are very, very different. And just as Dr. Westerveld just said, some diseases lend themselves, some cancers lend themselves much, much more to this targeted precision approach, where we can use an immunotherapy approach or even a chemical or a modified white blood cell, which is really what CAR T is. It's a white blood cell that's been trained to kill cancer. And it's very effective. Other cancers aren't responding like that. So the battle is ongoing. I think we're making progress. It's a step-by-step win over time. We're in a place right now that we didn't think was possible 20 years ago. More effective treatments, and at the same time, the treatments are not as toxic. They don't have as many side effects. So that's a great step in the right direction. But the zero cancer, we cure every cancer right away, we're not quite there yet.
All right, well,
But
we do need to take a quick break. We are talking about precision medicine, things like immunotherapy and CAR T therapy and gene therapy. What are your questions for these doctors? Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can post that comment on Facebook or Instagram or send us a brief email. talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. New ways to detect or treat cancer. They're promising, but physicians caution against considering any of them as one size fits all. We're talking about what some of these new approaches can and cannot do. With me, Dr. Peter Westerfeld with Maine Health. He's a medical oncologist. And Dr. Christian Thomas with New England Cancer Specialists. He's an oncologist as well and director of clinical research. Share your comments and questions. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Calling us now is Dr. Jens Ruder, who is an oncologist and chief medical officer with Jackson Laboratory and medical director for the Maine Cancer Genomics Initiative. Thanks so much for calling in, Dr. Ruder.
Yes, hello, Jennifer. Thanks for having me today.
I understand that Jackson Lab has been involved with genomic tumor testing for cancer patients. Explain how those tests are being used. What do they look for?
Yes, happy to do so. So, as was already mentioned earlier, and Dr. Thomas and Dr. Westphal mentioned, we have really started to individualize cancer treatment for patients now. And one of the most important steps in doing so is to actually look for specific genetic or genomic aberrations, so changes in the DNA and the RNA and all these other markers in patients' tumors, so that we can actually classify them as, being one of these more precise subgroups. The Jackson Laboratory, as a nonprofit, biomedical genetic research institution in Maine, we started a project in 2016 called the Maine Cancer Genomics Initiative, which really aimed to provide access to tests like this, which back in 2016 were not readily available. They are nowadays, but they were not in 2016. And we also recognized that interpreting the information that comes from these tests can actually be very complicated. Some of these tests look at 500 plus markers at one time, and while some of them are well characterized, others are much more difficult to discern. So we started a program called Genomic Tumor Boards, where we discuss the results from this tumor testing with the oncologists, with Dr. Thomas, in fact, directly once a month, and then also with Dr. Westerfeld and his colleagues. So we do this with every practice in the state of Maine that is interested. Clinicians and doctors can provide test results to us, and we will actually call what we call a genomic tumor board. We will call that together. We will have experts from essentially around the world that call in and provide their opinion. We have expertise within Jackson Laboratory in terms of how to interpret these results. And what we try to do is we try to really get the most out of the information and make it very clear to clinicians how they can use it to treat their patients. We've been quite successful with this, and looking forward to continuing the work.
Well, I think this is interesting on so many fronts, but one thing, I don't know if you heard the beginning of the program, Dr. Reuter, but mainly we were talking about how these this precision medicine might treat a patient, but you're talking about identifying the cancers maybe even before they develop based on genetic testing.
Well, that's actually a slightly separate topic. So yes, we can. We can certainly detect genetic predisposition to cancer as well. But what we've been focused on is really looking at a tumor once it has developed, and once we can actually analyze the different genetic changes within the tumor to identify the best treatment option. But we are now starting to see also tests that can certainly, we've actually known for many years that we can detect a genetic predisposition to developing cancer, and then we can potentially act on that. That's a whole other topic that is also, more and more information is coming out, and we're able to make better decisions. And then the newest thing is that we can also, there are some tests out there that can actually detect the cancer before we can visibly see it on a CT scan or some other form of imaging. But again, that's also a whole other separate topic with many sort of, complicated implications and a lot of promise as well.
You mentioned that the Maine Genomic Project started in 2016. I'm wondering, as you look forward, what do you see as other promising new areas for cancer research?
There's, as was already discussed, the immune therapy and how the body reacts to cancer from an immune system perspective has become incredibly powerful, but there's still lots more to discover. And there's actually at JAX and in other places, there's a lot of basic translational research happening to furthermore decipher what's actually going on with the immune response to cancer. Same with therapeutics. There are CAR T cells were mentioned, and there are other form. And then there's also more traditional medications that actually interfere with sort of the not so sufficient response to cancer, and there are more medications that are or more processes like that we can discover, and that's what a lot of research is focused on in the moment, as well as the specific genetic drivers that can cause cancer and can also predispose patients to cancer, and then also can be used to treat cancers.
Dr. Reuter, thank you so much for calling in. Dr. Jens Reuter, Medical Director for the Maine Cancer Genomics Initiative. He's an oncologist with the Jackson Lab. And I want to sort of follow up on that a little bit, and I'll go to you, Dr. Thomas. I bet you have patients that say, can't I just do a blood test and find out if there's cancer in me before a tumor shows up? And what is your answer to that? And how would you like all of us to think about whether all of us are walking around with some sort of cancer cells?
Yeah, it's a really good point. And what Dr. Reuter was talking about, who he has really been instrumental together with Jackson Laboratories to help get main cancer practices together to help with treatment, testing and treatment, one should say. I just want to take 1 second and say that precision medicine really requires that we identify a target. So there's no precision without a precise target. Identifying a target really requires relatively, call it complicated, but relatively intricate testing, let's put it that way. And a lot of the breakdowns in trying to get the right patient, the right care at the right time happen during that period. Testing can't be done, or it can't be done at the right time, or the test result isn't available, or is very, very difficult to figure out what the test result really means. So when we talked about having this tumor board, that's really experts getting together, trying to figure out which one of those target defining tests are really the most important ones. So there's no little flag that goes up that says, this is the one to target. There are multiple targets, and sometimes you're trying to figure out which one is the most important target to try to hit first. So just as a general, we sometimes think that precision medicine is sort of like an easy one-way answer to, like, here's the precise target and this is what we do. In reality, it doesn't quite work like that. The other piece, obviously, is that testing in and of itself, and this is part where the Main Genomic Cancer Initiative came in, testing in and of itself isn't always available easily. And that's where Jackson Lab actually did a great job in bringing those resources together for
And
patients in need.
I think that illustrates how complex this is, the fact that some of the best minds in Maine will gather just to discuss one case and hope to be able to come
Absolutely.
up. We're gonna have a
Absolutely. And
mess.
the question you asked, by the way, is a very good question in terms of, can we use some of those tests to detect cancer before it becomes evident? And yes, the short answer is yes, without going into some long technical detail, but it is really possible now to run a blood test to look for tiny little pieces of cancer cells or their DNA and to determine if that puts a patient at risk. What we don't have quite yet is exactly to know at what point in time do we need to treat these patients, and what does that do ultimately to what is going to happen to the patient. That is information that will take a few years to work
You said a few years, though. You didn't say decades.
out. I'm the eternal optimist.
We have a message here on Instagram. My father is alive today because of CAR T therapy. He had a large B cell lymphoma, and after a stem cell transplant, he experienced another recurrence of his cancer, at which time he was advised to proceed with palliative care. My mother, a longtime nurse, discovered CAR T from a segment on a news channel around the same time. After consulting dad's oncologist, they agreed to proceed with CAR T. It is truly life-saving. Several years have passed, and dad has not had any recurrence and is doing well. Dr. Westerfeld, that is really powerful testimony.
Indeed, and I'm so happy to hear that your dad's doing well. So, no, great example of the power of this emerging therapy.
How often are there stories like this? Is this an outlier or not so much?
Not at all. I would say more and more as more of these therapies have been FDA approved and are becoming available. The numbers of those success stories continues to grow. I think one of the challenges in the CAR T field is bringing it closer to home. This is a therapy that is not yet available in Maine, although something we're actively working towards. As of right now, these patients are referred to other centers, primarily for us, at least in Boston. But we are, as I said, working to make these therapies available for patients in Maine.
An email here from Julie. I, like so many, am a breast cancer survivor. Are any of these new alternative therapies showing hope for breast cancer? Dr. Thomas.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So there are a number of targeted treatment options available for breast cancer where very, very specific abnormalities within the breast cancer cell itself are being targeted by medication. So it's basically a pill or an injection. And in addition, immunotherapy has made a big difference in the breast cancer field as well. And immunotherapy would be typically an infusion that's given once or twice a month, say. And what that does is it's activating a patient's immune system to go after, identify, seek out, and then kill cancer cells. So both of these options are available, and both of these options are considered to be, a great step in the right di direction in terms of precision medicine use for breast cancer. So yes, the answer is yes.
An email here from Deb. Do you believe gene therapy would be helping with autoimmune disease like, and I hope I pronounce this right, ankylosing spondylitis, where the gene HLA27 has been identified? Dr. Westerfeld.
Let me think about that one. A little
That's fine.
outside of my field.
Okay, Dr. Thomas, is that one that you're comfortable taking?
It's a ankylosing spondylitis is a rheumatological illness where typically what happens is that the spine becomes less and less movable and people become stiffer over time. The HLA-B27 is a marker that is associated with it, but not necessarily the cause. And that's actually a good way to explain that sometimes we find a marker, but we're not 100% sure how that particular marker or that particular gene or protein is actually causing disease, if at all, or if it's just a byproduct. To answer the caller's question is, I'm not aware that gene therapy approaches have been tried for ankylosing spondylitis at this point. But I think that that's another whole area, the rheumatological disease area, where something like that, and including targeted treatments and immunotherapy, are being used. In particular, immunotherapy, actually, because it's, if anything, an overstimulating of the immune system. And now we're finding ways to downregulate the immune system. So we've talked about upregulating the immune system to kill cancer cells. At the same time, the autoimmune diseases, sometimes you have to downregulate and calm it down because it's overactive.
But
Go ahead.
I would also add that there is now evidence, some anecdotal reports of the use of CAR T cells and the effectiveness of CAR T cells in treating lupus, which is another autoimmune disease. So again, downregulating rather than upregulating the immune system. So stay tuned, I guess.
Well, we are talking about new therapies for cancer here on Maine Calling. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. If you're quick, you still have time to send us a question by email or on social media. Social media, find us on Facebook or Instagram and by email, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. We're learning about the latest advances in medical research and technology, especially for cancer treatment. My guests are both oncologists, Dr. Christian Thomas with New England Cancer Specialists and Dr. Peter Westerfeld with Maine Health. You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. I'll repeat that, 1-800-399-3566. 3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. Dr. Thomas, I wanted to ask you if most insurance companies cover this therapy, but just generally speaking, is it available to most people?
Yeah, I mean, we are struggling with that. And that extends way beyond precision medicine or any of these newer strategies that we have just discussed. So, getting patients in to be seen in a timely manner is not always easy. Getting patients diagnosed within a reasonable timeframe is not always easy. I'm talking about basics here a lot of times. So, when patients live, especially when they live in certain areas in Maine that are a bit more rural, access is a huge problem in the sense that patients don't get diagnosed early enough a lot of times. And then you mentioned access to the new treatments. They tend to be more expensive, so they're a little harder to get. There are more barriers. There's a lot more red tape from insurance companies. Dr. Westerwelle mentioned that CAR T isn't available in Maine. In part, that's because it's a very involved treatment that re often requires hospitalization and expert care. We're working on getting some of these newer treatment options available, make them available to all Mainers. But care delivery is a problem also in cancer care. And of course, there it can have very profound consequences.
Dr. Westerfeld, we're hearing a lot about artificial intelligence and how it applies to everything. How does it apply to these new therapies for cancer, or does it?
I think it does. Certainly, artificial intelligence is basically a way of deconvoluting really complex, large data sets. And as was talked about earlier, we're trying to understand the role of various genes and what they predict in terms of prognosis as well as response to therapy. And AI has been used to help and discern patterns in these large data sets. AI has also been used or is being used now in scanning biopsy specimens, for example, to discern patterns to help pathologists diagnose cancer. The same can be said about, for example, interpreting mammograms, again, looking for patterns. And so AI, as you say, it's kind of intercalating into every aspect of modern life. And I think medicine in general and oncology in particular is no exception.
We'll go to Tony, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Tony, go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I just wanted to give some recognition. I forget his name, but there's someone who was healed by CAR T therapy. He's from Maine, and he actually calls himself the CAR T Man. And he has a comic book, and his car is actually vinyl wrapped with like a superhero-esque kind of thing. Again, I forget his name, but you can look him up online.
Oh my goodness. So I'm looking it up. I'm trying to find it. It looks like he's got a whole book about this. Oh, closing down a store pretty soon. Very interesting. And this is somebody here in Portland, Maine?
I believe he lives down in Kennebunk, but yeah, he's from Maine.
That's great. Is this Tyler Goodwin? Does that sound right?
Yep. Yeah, that's his name.
There we go. CAR T man. All right. Well, thank you for telling us about that, Tony. We'll go to Richard, who's calling from Cape Elizabeth. Hi, Richard. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I'm a lymphoma cancer patient survivor, I guess you could say, at this point. I was treated with both chemotherapy and bone marrow transplant before I had the CAR T cell treatment. And at the time, it was kind of a requirement to have two failed, major treatments before you could qualify or get accepted, for a CAR T cell program. So I'm just wondering if that is still the case, where people can are able to opt for a CAR T cell treatment, sooner.
Richard, that's a really wonderful question, but I just want to ask you how you're doing today.
Oh, I'm doing fine. I'm doing
Wonderful.
fine. I mean, now for me, the CAR T cell did fail after about 60 days to a certain degree, and I needed to. This was another question, but I mean, I needed to supplement that with both radiation and Keytruda, and that seemed to do the trick. I mean, just so you know, I'm also taking an alternative therapy on my own, which is called the Joe Tibbins protocol, and it all
Richard,
seemed to work somehow. So,
Wonderful. Richard, I'm so glad you called in. And Dr. Westerfeld, I'll go to his first question, that when he was being treated, he had to have already had other treatments. He'd had to already have bone marrow transplant and chemotherapy before he could qualify for a CAR T therapy. Is that still the case?
Yeah, so first of all, I'm glad you're doing well now. And to answer your question, the way most newer therapies are brought online is they are targeted at people that have more advanced disease. And then when they're shown to be effective, they are studied in clinical trials where they're sort of moved up the ladder, if you will. There are now indications or approved indications for CAR T cells for patients, for example, that have failed one therapy or failed relatively early in the course, like say prior to a year. So yes, the landscape has changed somewhat since these therapies first came online.
All right. Dr. Thomas, is there anything you'd like to add to that?
No, I think it's a good point. I think I just want to make a general point, I think, and that is that there are multiple treatment options out there. You know, we talked early on about surgery and radiation therapy, but in terms of the sort of internal medicine, the pharmacological treatment, if we want to call it that, or the immune therapy treatment, we're still talking about everything, right? So when we see patients, we try to use whatever we can to get that patient in a remission and, if possible, cure them. So that sometimes could be chemotherapy upfront. There are diseases that respond to chemotherapy and go away completely, just not every disease. So we look at all these newer treatment options also as they definitely fulfill a need. Nothing is a one-size-fits-all answer. So what our job is to do is try to figure out what is the best treatment for this particular patient at this particular point in time. And that's also where this discussion about when do we do CAR T cell, this will be, or any of the newer treatment options, this will change over time.
Richard, thank you. And again, I'll repeat what everyone has said. I'm glad you're doing well. We're going to go to an email from Sarah, and I think this is a great question. She writes, facing my first appointment with a gyno-oncologist in a week. What are the best questions I can ask? I want to be prepared. I'll start with you, Dr. Thomas.
Well, it depends a little bit on what the problem is, obviously. But that's maybe the best question to start out with. You know, what is the issue? Is there a particular stage of, I'm thinking gyno-onc, gynecological oncology, so cancer, obviously. What is the stage, and what would be a potential way to treat this particular tumor type? And based on that treatment, what can I expect? Can I expect a response to the treatment? Can I expect a complete response, meaning that there's no evidence of the tumor being left over after the treatment? And will that response last? In other words, can I be cured from this? And then once you start talking about treatment, you want to know how much, how often, and the side effects and all that stuff, because we love to talk about medicines, but we also need to say that many of these medicines have significant side effects.
And Dr. Westerfeld, what would you add to that?
I guess one thing I would add is something I sort of would counsel any patient with a new diagnosis of cancer is to ask, what clinical trials am I eligible for? Clinical trials are how we got to where we are today and how we'll get to where we hope to be tomorrow. And so I would encourage everybody to consider enrolling in well-designed clinical trials to help answer some of the unknowns or the unsolved problems that we face.
And would you all agree with me, and I'm going to speak on personal experience here, that if possible, it's good to take someone with you? Because I feel as though when you're told something that's really big and really hard, sometimes you hear one word and your brain just sort of goes into shutdown, and all those other things that the doctor might tell you aren't sticking.
Very true. Very true. That's a very, very common issue. And the doctors often forget that. I speak out of personal experience, of course. You'll explain something to a patient. The patient says, "Oh, absolutely," and will ask questions and engage. But it's very, very, very difficult to retain that information. So having somebody with you is super, super helpful.
The other thing I would add is I always tell people to write down their questions, because they always come up on the way home and over the weekend, and to write them down so that when they come back, can have a more informed or comprehensive discussion about all of those things.
We have so many emails coming in, mostly about specific cancers, but I'm going to go to this email from John. In February of 2020, I was diagnosed with stage 4 Merkel cell carcinoma, the cancer that Terry Bradshaw was diagnosed with and that killed Jimmy Buffett. I had metastases the size of an egg in my right lingual lymph nodes and a grapefruit in my abdominal wall. After 17 infusions of
pembrolizumab.
Thank you. Which is Keytruda, an immunotherapy drug. Over 13 months, those cancerous lesions had resolved metabolically, that is, disappeared. I've been cancer-free now for 43 months. For me, immunotherapy was a miracle lifesaver. One of its advantages was that it was systemic treatment, that is, it allowed my immune system to go after cancer anywhere in my body, unlike surgery and radiation, which is localized treatment. Without it, I would be dead. Dr. Thomas, another really powerful email.
It's a great story. Merkel cell carcinoma, of course, is very uncommon, but it's a very aggressive form of skin cancer. And we always think that we can cure skin cancers by cutting out the piece that's involved with cancer. And that's true for a majority of skin cancers. In this particular case, it had moved to other parts of the body. And turns out this Merkel cell carcinoma cancer thing is very, very effectively treatable with immunotherapy. So that's what we're hearing here, the power of immunotherapies, so that when the white blood cells were activated, they found all the cancer cells and kept killing them. So congratulations, that's a great story.
An email here from Martha. My husband was diagnosed with, oh boy, all these big words today, cholangiocarcinoma last November. He underwent a relatively new procedure called Y90 in January with excellent effect. We had not heard it called a precision treatment, but it seems very much the case. Radiated microglass beads treated with yttrium were injected by an interventional radiologist. So Dr. Westerfeld, what we've been talking about today on Main Calling, we hear about these radiated beads. Is this the same as what we're talking about, or is this a whole nother area of cancer treatment? Is this in the same umbrella as precision medicine that we've been talking about?
I think it's a little bit different. I will say that there have been attempts to use radiation in immunologic or immunotherapies targeting particular, radioactive iodine, for example, to the bone marrow or to lymphoma cells, for example, which would be more of a precision medicine approach as opposed to injecting into a particular site, which it sounds like this is more an example of.
We'll go to Jane, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Jane, go ahead. And if you could be really quick, that'd be great.
Okay. I just wanted to say I'm originally from Pennsylvania, and a young girl there, her name is Emily Whitehead, was either the first or one of the first children to receive CAR T-cell treatment. And that was at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. But if people want more on the story, if they look up Emily Whitehead, they can find out about it.
Well, Jane, thank you so much. And I saw both doctors smile and nod when you brought up her name, and I appreciate it. And I want to say thank you to both of you. We're out of time. As always, so many emails we were not able to get to, but I really appreciate your time today, for both of you. Dr. Peter Westerfeld, a medical oncologist with Maine Health. Dr. Christian Thomas, director of clinical research and an oncologist with New England Cancer Specialists. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. You can find our past shows and sign up for our weekly newsletter, which is free, going to mainecalling.org. And you can share your thoughts with Maine Calling by using the Maine Calling, the Maine Public Vox Pop app. So download Maine Public Vox Pop, and then you can record your comments for any program. Tomorrow on the program, the true story Lost on a Mountain in Maine has been made into a major motion picture. In theaters later this week, we'll talk to the director and producer and members of Don Fendler's family. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.